920 WDAE, home of the Buccaneers.
Perfect throw, Freeman, and a great route by Michael Williams.
Now Buccaneers quarterback Josh Freeman and your host, Steve Dumy.
All right, welcome back. 6 o'clock. It is the Buccaneer Radio Network, baby. As the Bucs get ready for the Philadelphia Eagles this weekend, and there's a long-standing tradition playing the Eagles and the Buccaneers, and it will play out this Sunday. Most of the time, those were playoff games, and this reunion thing, Josh, is big. How much is the team talking about it, and are you excited about and the game's going to be on TV, you know?
Yeah, no, there's definitely some excitement around the game. You know, the team that won the Super Bowl, there have been guys around the building. I mean, it's pretty exciting. You know, it's been cool. Mike Olstadt was in today.
Was he?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely pumped up about it. You know, playing the Eagles, it'll be my first time playing against the Eagles, and now definitely looking forward to the opportunity.
Well, it won't be Michael Vick on the sidelines. That's the one thing, but they're going to play the rookie, and they've had their struggles, but they look to me, Josh, like they could be a dangerous team. You know, because at some point they got too much talent, I think, to continue to lose the rest of the season, but I'm sure you're preparing for that occasion.
Yeah, no question. They are a very talented football team. As you know, all the hype they got coming into this season, just how loaded they were. I mean, they've had a few injuries, but, you know, all in all, they are a very, very good team, and, you know, we're not a chance we'll overlook them.
No,
you
know, you're not.
We know exactly what we're getting into. We know the type of players they have, the type of coach they have, and you know, we're gearing up for a dogfight.
Speaking of a dogfight, last week, what was your experience with Mile High for the first time? No problems as far as that's concerned?
As far as the altitude, yeah. None personally.
Mm-hmm. Were some complaining?
No, I can't. I don't really know. You know, I was kind of locked in, and yeah, no, I think a couple guys had nosebleeds and some headaches, but. Yeah, no, for the most part of that. And then obviously the thin air, you know, that's something that takes some getting used to. But no, man, it was definitely it was a cool stadium. You know, they have a very good football team.
It was a tale of two halves.
Oh, no question.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
You guys dictated the play in the first half with the ball control, which is what you wanted to do, is keep him on the sidelines, right?
Yeah, no question, no question. And then you know, second half starts, and we have those those two drives that we started backed up.
The three and out. I said that.
Yeah,
exactly. Your two 3-and-outs in your own inside your own 20 was the difference in the ball game.
No doubt. And when you're punting from way back there against a quarterback like Peyton Manning, you know, it's gonna be points.
Did you catch yourself watching him at all?
Actually, not.
No.
No.
You're too busy, huh?
Yeah. No, we were trying to figure out a way to get some drives going and try to win.
They seem to have their sights set on Dougie for the entire game there, trying to shut him down. But he had some early success, and I thought Schiano did a decent job in explaining why he didn't have – you know, everybody wants to point to the rookie wall. But it's not really the rookie wall. I mean, when you're down 18 points, you have to throw the ball in the second half. But he looked like he was semi-effective in the first half, but they were geared to stop the run, weren't they?
Yeah, no, they were bringing pressures and doing different things that, you know, make it tough to run. You know, and it was, and then, yeah, like you said, second half, you know, you're down and you got to throw it.
And when they make you one dimensional, Vincent had a quiet game. Obviously, Chain Bailey has played against Vincent Jackson on several occasions in that division when he was with San Diego. Was the opportunities not there for Vincent? Or what? Was there something wrong with the passing game?
No. You know? I mean, the passing game's not necessarily geared around getting the ball to Vincent.
Yeah.
It was, you know, really, I mean, Mike had a decent game. You know, a couple other guys, Dallas made some plays, you know, but it really just didn't that coverage wasn't dictating giving Vincent the ball, you know, and try to get the one-on-one matchups. And it was really just a game that one of those games, you know, point blank. And it's kind of frustrating because we know that we didn't play as well as we could have, you know, especially offensively. I thought our defense did a great job of coming out and playing against Peyton Manning and that powerful Broncos offense. And, you know, we got to find a way to score more points.
It was kind of weird because John Lynch was the color analyst on the game. And he said he had never seen a defense do nothing against Peyton Manning, meaning not moving to his signals or trying to change because he's out there blurting out stuff and defenses are reacting to what he's saying, blah, blah, blah. The Bucs stayed in their base and said, you know, we're going to trick you this way. You know, he said he never had seen a team just sit there and do nothing except play defense, you know?
Yeah. No, those guys went out and, I mean, they executed. Obviously, when you play a guy like Peyton Manning, you know, he's going to find a way to get the ball downfield, move it and score some points. But now that all in all, our guys did a great job on defense.
All right. Well, it is Josh Freeman. If you want to dial us up, 990 in Hillsboro, Pinellas 461. They both end in 4620. We do have that Buccaneer prize pack and the Florida lottery this afternoon if you are a participant in the show. That includes a pair of tickets to the Bucs-Rams game, 100 gingerbread dough scratch-off tickets, and Buccaneers team merchandise, plus you get a chance to get out on the field if you're drawn out of the semifinalists, and you can win some cash. Did you buy your lottery tickets when there was $500 million?
No.
You're going to hit the lottery next year anyway.
No, I don't know. I didn't even know what it was until later that night, and people were calling me like, "Oh, did you get tickets?" I'm like, "Tickets?
Yeah, $500 million."
Especially,
I was standing in line, and it was like everybody thought they were going to win. You know, I mean, when you get in line, you think you're going to win. That's the idea.
That's the trick of the whole thing. You know,
it's only $22 million to win.
Yeah, no doubt. But hey, if you never buy a ticket, you know,
this little old lady, literally was right in front of me, and she pulled out 8 quarters and bought one ticket. And she said, "I robbed my piggy bank for this one." You know, I would have wished she would have won if I didn't win. But it was pretty cool to see her in the line. Let's go to the phones. Charlie is first up in Tampa with Josh Freeman. Good afternoon, Charlie.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
All right.
I had a question. Actually, when I called in, I said I was actually a question for Brad. He's not on yet, but
Put you back on hold if you want.
Oh, that's okay. I'll go ahead and ask it, and maybe you can play it as mine. I was listening to the last couple shows, and the defense, obviously, Rondé had time to watch the halftime show, and Derek had time to walk around and find him. I was going to ask Brad during that halftime, which is a long halftime, what the offense's frame of mind was.
Well, it's already in my notes to ask him that, so we're gonna ask him that, of course, for sure.
Okay, and then I guess real quick question for Josh. First of all, good luck on Sunday.
Thanks.
And also with the, I guess I'll just ask you, with the whole kneel down thing, and of course you go into the shotgun when you do your kneel down. Do you have an opinion?
We're not going to get into that. Sorry. Go ahead if you want to answer.
Well, no, we play till the end. You know, I think they almost got that last one out. You know,
really?
So you never know.
They knew it was coming this time, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And if you know it's coming, there's really no excuse.
I'd hope they would know.
Yeah.
You know? But no, who knows? Who knows? Maybe somebody gets a little anxious. The center kind of flinches.
Well, they did fire off the ball, so they knew it was coming. Not like they just sat back and got creamed because they fired off. And I was listening to John Fox the other day driving home, and he said, we told our guys, be ready. You know, and get out there and play. And you know what it's like at the end of the game. You come out there and you say, hey, we're kneeling or whatever. But coach doesn't want that to happen. He wants to try to create the turnover.
Yeah, no, I love it. If we get it back, get one more shot to throw it up to Vincent and Mike, you know, I'll take it.
You know you can't win scoring field goals against them, but it got you back in the game against Denver. You have to take what you can get. But, touchdowns are more valuable against Peyton Manning than field goals, obviously, against anybody. But Did you feel like at any point you were losing, you were falling too far behind as far as just settling for field goals instead of touchdowns?
You know, towards the end of the game, we were just trying to play the numbers game, you know, get it into a balance of possessions. You know, I know we had the one where I ended up scrambling on the end of the drive. We ran in and kicked a field goal. And then I ended up kicking another field goal in the fourth and set us up to be, I think, within 15 points. And then defense had a stop. We got the ball back with 250, something like that, left. Mm-hmm. And went down and scored with, I want to say, 230 left. So, you know, it got within one possession game. You know, it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
And then you talk about a four-minute offense. You know, it's tough. We put our defense in quite a squeeze.
Let's continue on with Dave, who is up next, and we're going to be joined shortly by Brad Johnson here. Let's go to Dave, who is up with Josh Freeman. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
How you doing tonight?
Good.
Just a couple questions here. The first one is concerning Coach Sully. His experience in the NFC East has had to help you prepare for all of the other teams that you played, and now with Philly. Talk to that, and also, is it your preference to take the ball from under center or use your height and take it out of the shotgun?
That's a good question.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, it's great questions. You know, as far as, you know, Sully has had a lot of experience, like you said, playing the teams from the East, and it's definitely helped. You know, he shed a lot of insight going into games, different players, a lot with personnel, different how guys play, how guys maybe a corner's tendencies, things of that nature. And then as far as under center and shotgun, you know, I guess our offense is kind of based on a two-back. You know, two-back running, the two-backs runs, whether it's power, whether it's lead, whatever it is.
So you have to be under center.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a deal. And I like it either way.
I know he said he didn't express any interest in BC job, but you have to be like breathing a sigh of relief. But did you not read about that, Sully?
No, I didn't.
They said he was a candidate for the Boston College job, that he had expressed interest, but he came out and said no. But that would have been nightmarish for you with another offensive coordinator, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's.
It's the nature of the beast.
Learning offenses, you know, and it's something I like to think I've gotten pretty good at. But no, it's you know, we love having Sully. You know, he's a great coordinator. You know, he's a great leader. Does an awesome job preparing us for the games. Did an awesome job teaching us this offense. And I didn't hear that, but
well, he dispelled the rumors, but he was a candidate, they said, for the job. But we'll take a timeout. We'll come right back. Brad Johnson will join us as well here as we continue our reunion week with the Buccaneer players of the Super Bowl. And he'll join Josh Freeman and I right after this on Sports Radio 620 WDAE. All right, welcome back. 16 minutes after 6 o'clock here on Sports Radio 620 WDAE. And it is the Josh Freeman Show here on the Buccaneer Radio Network, and we are pleased to be joined by the quarterback of your Super Bowl Buccaneers, and we see him every year at the Derrick Brooks tournament and meet up with that, but he's joining us as we continue the week of reunions. Brad Johnson, what up, Bull?
Hey, Steve, how you doing, man?
All right, how you doing? Say hello to Josh Freeman.
Hey, Josh, how you doing?
All right, he's got to put his mic on, but that, you know, it's great. Thanks for joining us, Brad. It really, how much are you looking forward to this weekend and getting back together with the guys?
Steve, I've never had my own show down there. Josh has gotten big time.
Not by choice. No, it's a fun show. It's definitely a fun show.
Josh, it's been great watching you play this year, man. You're tearing it up. It's fun to lead. Fun to watch you lead that team, man. You're playing some great ball all season long. So I know you're putting up big numbers in a new system with a lot of new players. So it's fun to watch you play.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. We're working. You know, it's been fun with Vincent, Doug, and then obviously the guys we've had, you know, Mike, Adam, Dallas, running this new offense. It's different, but it's You know, it's pretty cool. I remember I was telling you a little bit about it, down in Arizona.
Yeah, they put a lot. You got a lot of responsibility, and it seemed like y'all gelled together with a lot of side adjustments and things he's doing, and making a lot of plays at the line of scrimmage too. So it's fun to see you do it.
Yeah. Now, once you got past the major differences in terminology, you know, a lot of it's very similar concepts, very similar protection schemes, very similar, you know, side adjustment rules and things of that nature. So it was all, and some of the route concepts were kind of foreign to begin with, but we've repped them like crazy, and I feel like we're getting a pretty good feel for them.
Yeah, well, it's showing on the field, that's for sure. So y'all make a lot of big plays down the field too, so it's exciting to see.
Well, you had guys that you could make big plays down the field too as well, Brad, and, you know, this – what Josh has is probably the best offense since that Super Bowl year, when you had Keyshawn and you had Keenan McCardell, and you had some good offensive weapons. You had a great running game back then with Pittman and Allstott. As far as that was concerned, I mean, this is the best team offensively since that Super Bowl year. You know, you got some fond memories. You had the great weapons. And what was it like? Josh just talked about his terminology coming in with Sully. And the coaching staff, you had to learn Gruden's playbook. How hard was that in the first year?
It's always tough in your first year of terminology. In my 17-year career, I learned 6 different systems. So, you know, coming in with John, it was, you know, blast off the Joker right, X short, 22X drive, triple right, F right, 358 Nebraska X seam, check 98 bunch, crunch. If you don't like it, you got 359 sticky or 59 sail. I mean, you kind of go.
Wow, that's just one play?
Oh man, it's 2 or 3 plays I gave you.
I know,
but it's just, you know, it was always, John did a great job as far as teaching us formations and then being able to shift the motion with it, and then obviously knowing, you know, the weakness of our protections or the weakness of a defense if a particular blitz was coming, and you're just always audible ready. So you might have, you know, 2 or 3 plays in your back pocket for every play that was coming at you. The only time not was, you know, maybe a short yardage or a goal line play, those type things. But it was fun being with John. He's a great teacher. He made it fun. And kind of like Josh and a lot of those guys right now, we had to learn a new system. You had to pay attention in the meetings. You were taking great notes. It was exciting to be on the field. That team, we had a lot of different playmakers with Jared Vicious and Kenny McCardell and mm-hmm. Keyshawn, and then Ken Dilger, Ricky Dudley, and Pittman, and all started out of the backfield. So it was kind of a lot of different packages for, you know, all the different players. Even Carl Williams, there was a package for him in the red zone area. And it kind of went on and on. And the greatness of that team, the ball could be spread around with, you know, a lot of different playmakers who were dependable as far as their hands catching the ball. And we didn't turn the ball over, and we scored on a lot of short fields. We were a team that were probably more explosive in the first half than the second half because we had big leads. And the second half, you know, with, you know, playing winning football, a lot of times you don't get the extra 40 or 50 yards passing or whatever as far as your, you know, your numbers go. But we were able to close games out and run the clock out. So it was a great group. There's no doubt about that.
When you your philosophy was get the lead and let the defense take over in the second half. That was the plan.
it always is the plan. Yeah. But I think if you look at really most great offenses, and I mean, if you even take it back to the days of Dallas Cowboys with Troy Aikman, a lot of times Troy might throw, you know, 26 to 32 times in a game, but he might throw 18 to 21 in the first half. And a lot of times he had the big leads, and then you kind of pound them out in the second half. And that's really kind of where you get your, you know, you get your lead, your yards, your points in the first half, and close games out the second half. And if you're playing from behind, a lot of times you might get a lot of extra yards or cheap yards, but it's just different from winning football. And then, obviously, the game is changing a little bit now. You know, teams are a little bit more explosive in the passing game than they were, you know, 10 to 15 years ago.
Josh, you agree with that. Obviously, bringing Vincent in here was made this offense. Keyshawn was the ball control guy. Keenan could go down the field. You got Mike Williams as the ball control. And Jurevicius was the same way. But the offensive explosion, you lead the league in offensive explosive plays, I believe, as far as the Bucs are concerned. Plays over 20 yards.
Yeah, no, and you got to have guys that fill different roles, you know. And it's I wouldn't necessarily say Mike's a ball control guy. You know, he's caught some deep balls, and I think that definitely bringing in Vincent is it's opened up a lot of things. You know, it's hard for teams to play single high when you got Mike and Vincent out there. And yeah, they just create matchup problems, whether it's in the quick game, just the intermediate drop back, or the hard sell play action.
So you believe it's more explosive these days, Brad, than when you had the Super Bowl run?
Well, I think it depends on your team. And, yeah. And obviously with Mike and Vincent, they're averaging, you know, 18, 19 yards a catch. So, and Josh, he's at 8 yards per attempt, right on that range. So they're throwing up big numbers right now. And that's what makes it fun to see. Obviously with Doug, he gets a lot of yards in the running game, but he, you know, makes a lot of plays, it seems like, in the screen game, and just, you know, little checkdowns here and there. And obviously Dallas Clark making his catches too. So Josh does a great job of spreading the ball around, and they're getting big, you know, some big, big plays with their play action game. We were probably a little bit more of a ball control team with our play calling and the players that we had on that particular team. I think we probably did a little bit more shift and motion with our deal and just trying to get a lot of completions and move the chains and that type thing, and then take our shots more in the red zone kind of deal.
Hmm. Well, we are talking with Brad Johnson. He is the guest here on the Josh Freeman Show as we continue with our reunion week. We've already had Lynch and Sapp, and who was on Monday? Keyshawn Johnson joined us on Monday. I understand there's a surprise guest for tomorrow, hopefully. But, you know, you're certainly the quarterback of this club. And how is it going to be getting back with these guys? And I know you still have contact with them, a lot of them. But to get a reunion back and come on the field again for another time, what's that going to mean to you?
It's exciting to see, and I'll be honest with you, Steve, there's not a day that goes by that I'm not asked about the Super Bowl.
Really?
And it comes up in conversation. It's not like I bring it up. I don't wear a ring or anything like that. It just comes up in conversation just every day. And it's something that group of guys came together, some great players, and hopefully, you know, some Hall of Famers with that team. But, you know, you work all your life to be a part of something special. In the league 17 years. I was part of three great teams, but that was the best team I was ever on, even though I was on a team in Minnesota that went 15-1, but that our Tampa team was better, more well-rounded, and you play for that ultimate goal, and to put that ring on your finger and to come together, and it's instant satisfaction when you do it, because it's not a vote. It's not a political thing to make a Pro Bowl. It's not a political thing nowadays to make the Hall of Fame, which those guys deserve it. And they make it, but it's not that. It's instantaneous. And you lay it on the line to do it. Everyone's done it throughout their whole career, the whole season. But to come through in the moment of a Super Bowl run, it's different. People talk about it all the time. And when you do it, you talk to people that have lost the game, and they'll say, it's an overhyped just ball game. And the people that won it, they'll say it's one of the greatest days of their life. So it lives with you one way or the other. And to say we accomplished it, it's a dream come true. And I'm thankful for all those guys. And for it really, I mean, honestly, John coming in there, you know, he brought in 15 or 16 free agents with us.
Yep.
He amped up the defense to a higher level. Offensively, we brought in, you know, Ken Dilger and Dudley and Roman Oven and Jeff Christie was there. And I don't know, the list goes on. Pittman,
yeah.
Everybody. And it took everyone having their best year and coming together. And pulling it and coming through in the clutch when you had to, especially in January. So it was awesome to be a part of.
Wasn't the one loss against Minnesota to the Bucks?
I was not playing 15-1. I was hurt.
You were hurt
that day. It was a crazy day. Trent Dilfer. They went. I think the Bucks on that day went for it on fourth down 3 or 4 times. Dilfer had a great day and. All start.
I think Mike and Warwick both went for 100 yards in that game, didn't they? Each.
They did.
Yeah.
They did. It was one of those days. So it was a great ball game, regardless.
Well, Brad, hang in there. We're gonna keep you over if you don't mind. We've got some more questions for you. And we can keep going. We don't have to break. Oh, okay. Whatever. You got any questions, Josh?
No, I mean it's definitely gonna be really exciting. This team that, I mean, everybody talks about, you know, they got the statue in the lobby there at $1. And it'll be great, man. Are you already in town?
No, I'm coming in, bringing the whole family down on Saturday. and family have not been to, they've not seen the facility or anything. And then my kids, we came actually, they came back to, we saw Georgia play Michigan State last year down there in the Outback Bowl. So got to go to see that game. And first time really the kids have been back in the stadium since that. So looking forward to seeing everybody. I mean, we've all retired, so it's going to be kind of weird trying to figure out what Rodney Barber is going to do as far as is he going to come out with us at halftime, or is he going to, you know, what is the guy going to do?
He's ageless, isn't he, Brad? He's ageless.
He could,
right?
He's still making the same plays.
Yep.
He really is, and whether they moved him positions or whatever they've done with him, he's a playmaker, and we all owe him something special for the interception he had in Philadelphia. Closing the game out on the slant, they tried that McNabb tried to throw. So it's going to be fun watching him make some more plays on Philadelphia this weekend.
All right, I got a question. I want to know what the real story behind behind your injury in Detroit was the Super Bowl season.
Somebody put him up to that question, Brad.
That was a weird year, you know. No, that year, early in the year, I cracked my ribs and against Philadelphia, so I was out for a couple weeks. And then, actually, what really happened in the Detroit game, I cracked my transverse process. So, at the time, I didn't leak out the story. I told them out there. I told everyone I didn't want anybody to know what really had happened to me at the time. I could barely walk. I couldn't tie my shoes and those things. I didn't play the last Pittsburgh game on Monday night. Didn't play the Chicago game, last game of the season. We had a bye. Fortunately, I believe the Jets beat the Packers last game of the season, so it gave us the bye, the number two seed. Got another week's rest, and then I was really fresh going into the playoffs against San Francisco. But that's what Sean Rogers. He actually fell on my back. So that was the same
injury that Joe Montana had one year, wasn't it? I think the transverse, whatever that was. Yeah, and it's you see these guys get out there and play today, and you played, you played hurt. You had to do it. You know, you did whatever you had to do. I remember Mike always telling me, Brad, that he would, maybe today you have to tell trainers stuff. It's got to be more difficult to hide the injury in this day and age than it was back then. Because Mike used to tell Torchetti, if you tell anybody, I'm going to kill you,
there was times I told Todd Torch, obviously I'm sure he told, I said, don't tell Gruden this. I don't want you to know what's happening. I went off and, had MRIs at different places or x-rays at different places. And just because I didn't want the team to know, I didn't want it to get out into the injury report. And now, Everything's documented.
So you went out and paid for your own MRIs? You went out and paid for your own MRIs?
There were times I went elsewhere.
Yeah.
And just because I just didn't want anybody to know. And that's the injuries you play through as part of the game. And it's a little bit different now. I mean, obviously that would get out a little bit more than back in the day. And that's just through the media and stuff that comes out. So, but a lot of times I felt like it was just better to stay quiet about it than kind of talk about it.
Do you feel those injuries today a little bit?
Yeah, it used to be, you always ask the question, are you pimping or you limping? And so right now, I got a little more of a limp than I used to have. And I always had a little funny bow-legged walk anyways. But, I hurt from my knees. I had a neck surgery, had three knee surgeries, two toe surgeries, broken thumb, broken pinky, cracked ribs, broken jaw, transverse process, and just all the muscle injuries, from shoulder to elbow and all that stuff. So that just comes from the territory. You take a book like even on Josh right now, it's small, and then when his career's over, it's going to be, it's a 2-inch thick book on rehab or injuries that you go through. And that's just, it's kind of like riding a bull. It's not a matter of, if you're going to get hurt, it's a matter of when. That's just part of the game.
Well, I would say that the quarterback rules are different now, obviously, than they were when you played. I mean, could you imagine playing in today's rules where they really can't touch you and hit you? They can only hit you in between, basically in the chest, because you can't hit them below the knee and you can't hit them above the and you can't hit them above the head. I mean, back when you played, it was, and this is not that far away. This no, it's only 10 years. I know. That's what I'm saying. today's quarterbacks, they got dresses on, don't they?
Oh, it's unbelievable. These guys are so tall. No, I honestly, I am amazed by how good these quarterbacks are. and just the way they can throw the ball, the way they either stand in the pocket and can deliver the ball. Obviously, the numbers are big, the touchdowns are big, but just the way they do it, I think it's just the game has changed from, you know, from 85 to 95 to the, you know, to the early 2000s to where it is now. It's amazing to watch these quarterbacks deliver the ball and the yards and just the plays they're able to make. And you see it from, you know, obviously Josh's education just from, you know, you got kids in middle school, you know, reading the box.
Oh, yeah.
Then what are the cover? Is it a cover three, cover two check? And, I got to college. I didn't know what cover three and cover two was. I didn't have that. We were running some wing T in high school and Notre Dame box. And you know, there just wasn't that teaching. And now you got kids playing video games. And you know, they know the coverages. They know the players. They know the fronts. They know the, you know, who the mic. Is there a mic? I teach my kids, there's a mic. Here's a Sam. Here's a corner cat, son. And my kids are 9 and 11 years old. You know, that's where it's going. And to see these young quarterbacks, you know, obviously, you know, Josh is a 4-year player, but you're looking at Luck
RG3. The Wilson kid from Seattle's just doing everything that all these other two guys are doing.
He's tearing it up, winning a lot of games. And it's just, it's fun to see the growth of the game and the way these quarterbacks are playing.
I got to ask you, because we've asked this of everybody this week, you know, Brooks came out yesterday and said that I asked him a question. What does somebody not know about that Super Bowl season or that Super Bowl game that has never really gotten out? And I guess Rondé had brought it out earlier, but Brooks said that he caught Rondé watching TV at halftime, and it didn't sit real well with him because it's a long halftime. What were you doing at halftime that game? And it's a long one, isn't it? You can't prepare for it,
long,
can you?
Yeah. A regular NFL game is 12 minutes at halftime. A playoff is like 14 and a half. And the Super Bowl is 34 minutes. It's a long time. And really, we had a 20-3 lead at the time. It was a quiet. It was really kind of quiet. And, you know, Keyshawn was sleeping. Somebody might have been watching a DVD or whatever. But I just remember on the sidelines there's a play. And I was always just trying to memorize the plays and the huddle or whatever it was. And on the sidelines, it was me, Keyshawn, and John Gruden. And he's calling far west right, F short, 200 jet, Z choice, X smoke. And I'm sitting there trying to memorize the play. I'm like, oh, God, I got to just be able to fit this play on the huddle. And then Keyshawn just like, man, doesn't that popcorn smell good? from the stands, you know. And you always talk about smelling the roses, and it's hard in the moment, but that's what that was about, and really just the moment of being there together. And for me, at the end of the game, in 1987, this quarterback was my hero at the time, was Phil Sims with the Giants, and they were playing the great Denver Broncos with John Elway. And after the game, he got to say, Phil Sims, they won, and he got to say, I'm going to Disneyland. And since 1987, I was a senior in high school. Everybody was kind of saying that. That was the first year that Disney came out with the, you know, that commercial and all that kind of stuff, and you kind of kid around saying that in the mirror and everything. And all of a sudden, after the game, confetti's flying. I had my son Max in my arms. I had Nikki, my wife. She's 8 months pregnant with my son Jake. And all of a sudden, you know, we're saying we're going to Disneyland.
Hmm.
And it was just an incredible, surreal feeling to be a part of that. And so it was, you know, that was the moment.
I
look back.
Did it help you? We've had a lot of conversation on this one, too. Did it help you that you didn't have the extra week? This was the only Super Bowl in recent memory to go 1 week without a 2-week break because of all the hype. Did it help you guys actually not having to deal with the media? And you know, you dealt with the media, you know, on a limited basis, but there wasn't all the hype and the setup of 2 weeks. It was just get on a plane, beat the Eagles, come back, get your luggage packed, and get on a plane to San Diego. I mean, it really kept your mind off of a lot of things, didn't it?
It really did. It was a quick turnaround, and truthfully, that's right when, you know, cell phones and text started getting hot.
Mm.
And even though that was only 10 years ago, I just remember every time my phone was, you know, it had 20 messages on it at all times, you know. And for me, I ended up buying 25 tickets and, you know, a bunch of hotel rooms and plane flights and stuff. But that was, to me, it really did help us. We stayed in the rhythm of just playing the game. We had the bye week, went San Fran, went Philadelphia, went Oakland. So on a 14-day basis, win three games.
And, you know, for me, I think the nerves probably would have been built up a little bit more, you know, having to wait 2 weeks. So I was kind of thankful that we just played it in 1 week and got it done. We stayed in the rhythm of just playing fast and playing good football.
You know, everybody will always ask this question that it was the Oakland Raiders that you played, and there was always, you know, that's John's former team. How much did he know and how much did he teach the defense of what Rich Gannon was going to do? Because the annihilation of that offense, which was the juggernaut of the year that year, John Gruden knowing what the personnel was against the Oakland Raiders in that year.
Well, you know, obviously he helped us as far as knowing the personnel, but I think it's kind of curious to me because he was with Oakland all those years. They should have known our offense too.
Yeah.
you know, vice versa. So, but the moment of the week, and people have always talked about it, was at that time, Sean King and Rob Johnson, they were the backups and they were running scout team. And I think John just wanted his moment. You know, he wanted to take over. He kind of yelled at Rob and Sean because he just wanted to take over. He said, kick them out. And he wanted to make some audibles, and so it was a 2 minute situation, and he got up there, and you got a 40 second clock, and he'd get up there, and he was trips right, 96 Seattle, 96 Seattle, no, check, black, 97-1, and no, black, 358, seam, black, 358. I mean, it took him about a minute and a half to call each play. And he completed about 5 or 6 balls. I think the defense let him complete his balls, and so he got to score a touchdown as the head coach and winning quarterback at that time. And after we got back off the buses, he was the first one to watch the film to critique his play. But he kept it light that week. Gruden had us dialed in, and obviously knowing Oakland stuff, but he kept it light at the same time because he knew all the pressure and everything that was being built up.
Well. We're glad to have you come back for this thing. It was a great moment. We had with Derek Brooks yesterday, we had people calling in with memories of where they were. Everybody will remember where they were against the Eagles and against the Oakland Raiders. You know, you created a lot of good memories, Brad.
It was an unbelievable, and I've talked about it quite the night we came back from Philadelphia, the pep rally that was there from the pep rally.
Mm-hmm.
10 or 15,000 people. When we left to go to San Diego, all the people, another pep rally. Then the stands being full when the plane came back in town after the Super Bowl. But to me, the parade was really special.
That's what Brooks said, the same thing. Yep.
And we were and that year, I was going to the Pro Bowl, and I was lynched. You know, I was like, golly, John, it's just a long ways to go back home because we were going to have to fly back, you know, Monday, come back Monday, then fly back out Tuesday or Wednesday back out to Hawaii. And I just didn't realize what it was, you know, and that really brought it back home for how much it meant to the people of Tampa,
mm-hmm.
Just through all the dark years, and then just being a part of the celebration. You just don't get to experience something like that and what it meant to everybody. And John and I were in the same convertible, and we were kind of acting like fools. And I was going Tampa, and John had the other side going Bay, and then I'd go World, and the other side would go Champs. And we'd run around kind of, you know, just having fun. And at some point, John had gotten out of the convertible. Warren Sapp, he had gotten out of the convertible. And as much as it meant to me to be a part of that, those two, they hugged each other. And they were there when it all began,
mm-hmm.
in the mid-90s for those guys. Being drafted, the team was, pretty, you know, just it wasn't a very good team. And to see them, the growth of it, to stay with it all the way through, and to see the city come together to finally bring the trophy home, it was a special moment just to watch those two guys hug, and just, you know, in a celebration way.
Well, we're gonna let you go, and it was an absolute pleasure to talk to you. It always is. Yeah, it always is, and we'll see you Sunday. And we'll see you at the Derek Brooks tournament, and you know, it's just been it'll be an amazing reunion, and the game's not blacked out, so everybody's gonna be able to see it. And congratulations again, Brad, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Well, it's going to be fun. Again, Josh, it's fun watching you play this year, man. I know you're going to lead them to great success this year, but just for many years to come. So excited to see you play this weekend.
Thanks, Brad. And like Steve said, congrats. That's awesome. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend.
All right. Tear them up, buddy.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Brad.
All right.
Appreciate it.
All right. See you, Steve.
Yeah. Thank
you. All right,
bud. Yep. He's a one of a kind boy. I tell you, I talk to him every year when he comes back for the Brooks tournament, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see these guys get together again. They're looking forward to it. We've had so many to talk to, And they are so much looking forward to this reunion. I mean, for Gruden to come in, Monty Kiffin's coming in. Certainly, it's going to be a lot of fun this week. And they're going to be all watching you guys play the Eagles, for sure. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and get some more of your phone calls here on Sports Radio 620 WDAE. It is the Josh Freeman Show here on your Buccaneer Radio Network. All right, we are back. That was great with Brad Johnson, and the stories continue to go on, and it's just great when these guys get together for football. And it gives you an indication of what you can expect if you ever get to when you get to the Super Bowl and win it, the crowds, the stadium filling up, and the jet plane dipping, and all the excitement level. Mm-hmm. And that's what you play for, right?
That is what you play for. You know, you go out and you play you know, for your teammates, for your family, for your fans, you know, and you can go out and do that, you know, talking to Brad just then, you know, mm-hmm. you could hear the excitement in his voice, just reliving it. And it's definitely what you're
It's amazing that he can still spit out John Gruden's plays to this day like he was standing in a huddle, you know. Are yours that long?
A few of them.
Are they?
Yeah.
All right, let's be fair and get to the phone lines as they want to talk to Josh as well. Let's go to Harry, who is up next. Good afternoon, Harry.
Good afternoon. Josh, I'd like to thank you first for a great job you're doing this season. And if you don't mind, I'd like to ask two questions and I'll take it off the answer off the air. First one is there any chance that we can utilize Dallas Clark more in our offense? I know that Vince and Mike is doing a great job for us, but I just wonder if we could work Dallas in a little bit more. And then the second question is, when we get down on the goal line, would it be possible for us, or does the coach, the offensive coordinator, does he have an aversion against quarterback sneak? Seems like that would be a good option for us sometimes. I'll turn the radio on and listen.
Thank you. Understanding is, Josh is a perfect 100% on quarterback sneaks of picking up the first down.
Yeah.
They're not averse to that, are they?
No, but I mean, at the same time, other than, trying to think, you had the one drive New Orleans game, then the drive Atlanta game, where we went outside. But, you know, we've been pretty successful, you know, running the power, you know, behind Donald and Zuta.
Mm-hmm.
We've been getting some movement. And but no, definitely not opposed to a QB sneak.
With the Dallas Clark, you've been working Dallas Clark into the game more.
Yeah, I know Dallas has been making quite a few plays. I mean, he's our third leading. What does he have? Five touchdowns?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Dallas is he's doing a great job, you know, and it really depends on the game, you know. You could play a team and they could play a coverage that completely, I mean, deters you from throwing the ball to Dallas. And then on the flip side, you could play a team that's gonna do everything they can to blanket the outside, stop Mike and Vincent, and then Dallas has a great game.
Well, I'm sure you watched film of the Philadelphia Eagles, and they've been on national television for two of their last two games, basically. And the tight end has just Cam Newton just found guys running down the seam, tight ends and players. I mean, they've left, for whatever reason, they've left that seam open down the middle of the field. And that's a Dallas Clark play, or that could be anybody this Sunday, but I'm sure you've seen what their defense has reacted and not reacted to in these last couple of games.
Yeah, no, we've definitely watched their coverages, watched their schemes, and, you know, Coach, yeah, I mean, every week you put in plays to try to capitalize on the other team's their weakness, but, I mean, on the flip side, they're watching their film. Mm-hmm. You know, they're understanding where they're getting hurt, and guys are being made aware of it, but, you know, it's just one of those things you have to play. You know, you just have to go out and play. You don't know, I mean, you could run the same play into the same coverage, and the ball could go a multitude of places. You know, you talk about just variations in one certain coverage. You know, when you run offensive plays, you're trying to put stress on one player, two on one off one player in zone. And, you know, that player could take away either of the guys. If he jumps the underneath route, you might hit the deeper route. If he backs up and everybody pads are dropped, you know, you're probably going to end up dumping it down.
All right, let's continue on with John in Land O'Lakes. Go ahead, John. Oops, I got to punch him up. That would help. There he is. Good afternoon, John.
Hey, how are you guys? All great right. Show as always.
Hey.
Certainly looking forward to this game. I could do every game that I go to, but from a celebratory standpoint for 2002. But I'm thinking that whether it be 11, 12, 13, we're going to have another Super Bowl with you and your cronies, Doug, Vincent, Mike, and the rest of them. And then 10 years from now, you'll be coming back. Hell, you may still be playing like Rondé. And coming back and enjoying the Super Bowl.
You know,
that's what I really want.
He's only 24 years old, so he's got
a lot of
career left. Absolutely is right.
And we want that whole career here in Tampa Bay. And I think I speak for about 50 to 100,000 people right there when I say that. But my question, Josh, for you and secondarily for Steve is so many times, and we see the success when we get the ball in Doug's hands, is there, obviously you probably have a couple of, as you call them, sets where you try to get the ball to Doug in space. Is there a time you look for a coverage where you actually audible into a screenplay to try to, you know, basically take advantage of a blitz or an over-aggressive situation on the defense where you can audible into a screen, get the ball in Doug's hands in space, and turn that, you know, three-yard pass into a 45-yard completion?
You know, I know it's within the realm of our offense, but, you know, really we haven't seen a whole lot of pressure this season. You know,
okay.
A lot of times when you set up the screen, you want to call it into pressure so it looks like the back's trying to block a blitzer, and he peels off the blitzer, you dump it to him, and then there's nothing but a wall of O-linemen downfield. But we actually, the Broncos game, we went to a screenplay on might have been a second down after we had a little gain on first down, and we went to it just no huddle, got up on the ball, went into a screen and hit it, and I mean it got some decent yardage, you know. So definitely, you try to get the screen game going every game, and like you said, I mean just getting the ball in number 22's hands and letting him work, you know. Trust me, as a quarterback, I'm all for it.
Absolutely, and I just want to close my call by saying all the quarterback can do is make the right decision and make the right throw. Someone still has to catch. Someone still has to run. And you've been doing that the whole season. You don't need to be told that, obviously. And there's been a couple of key times where if your pass was actually caught for the first down, we'd be looking at an 8-4 record and talking about, well, are we going to get home field for the playoffs? So I just want to say from the Tampa Bay community, Josh, as the quarterback, you're doing a fantastic job, and we're behind you all the way. Have a good one, guys.
Hey, thanks.
Thank you. Very nice. It's it takes all 11 on every single play to make it a successful play, doesn't it?
Oh, that's the
truth. Not all on one person at all, ever. Somebody's got to run the right route. Somebody's got to hit the hole the right way or hit the cutback. Somebody's got to make the block. The wide receivers have to block downfield. For a long play for Doug to bust one, wide receivers blocking down the field are vital.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
The way our guys get after it, you know, mm-hmm. Coach Fleck has those guys, you know, taking the angles, whatever it is. I mean, within our system, checking out of bad runs, and Doug can get to that first level. I mean, we know we got him blanketed on the backside.
Hmm. Interesting. Let's go to Dustin. Good afternoon, Dustin. You're up with Josh Freeman.
Good evening, Steve and Josh. How y'all doing?
All right.
I'm doing great.
My question is, I know you watched a lot of film this week on the Eagles, Josh, and those cornerbacks they have are supposedly elite with Rodgers, Cromartie, and Nnadi Asamoah. Have you found some weaknesses watching them in film? I haven't been too impressed with them, actually, but they are claimed to be, you know, two of the best. You found some weaknesses to be to pick them apart this week?
That's a great question. No, both those guys, like you said, I mean, they're both come highly recommended. You know, they're both guys that they have track records of being elite corners. And, you know, if you watch the film, teams are hitting some concepts that are trying to get rub routes and trying to get different things downfield. But I mean, we were watching a tape just with a bunch of the shot plays, the deep throws downfield, and those guys, Rodgers, Cromartie, I mean, the recovery speed,
mm-hmm.
you know, those guys, mm-hmm. The receiver will put a great move on them and be working downfield, and those guys find a way to get back in and make a play. I know they did a number of times against Dallas, and but it's like when you play any team, you know, there's there are going to be opportunities. But at the same time, as a quarterback, you can't get impatient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if those guys are playing great D, they're dropping in the zone, they're playing man, they're covering up your guys, you can't be like, oh, man, I got to throw it downfield, because it's not there. And if you do that, I mean, you're going to have a turnover, and that's going to end up costing your team. So, I mean, the main thing is just, I mean, be patient. You know, we have some great receivers. They're going to get open. We'll have our shots.
Yep. Well, go get them against the Eagles.
No doubt.
The Super Bowl chance, we'll be watching you. We'll all be watching you, because it's on TV and it's against the Philadelphia Eagles, and we hate the Eagles. All right. For Josh Freeman and Brad Johnson, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody. See you.